Hello, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. In each episode, you'll hear from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. Forwards is the album of Mike Peters' life. Peters, the singer and guitarist of Welsh rockers The Alarm, gives fans an inside perspective of his cancer journey on his new album. Arriving via the 21st Century Recording Company on June 2nd, Peters wrote his band's latest LP while hospitalized in 2022 for leukemia. It was the latest phase of a cancer journey that began for Peters in 1995 when he received a diagnosis of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That was followed by chronic lymphocyte leukemia in 2005, which first relapsed in 2015. Peters, who with The Alarm has released 23 studio albums, sold more than 5 million copies, and charted 17 top 50 singles in the United Kingdom, has balanced cancer care and music for decades, touring and recording regularly with both The Alarm and as a solo artist. Jules Peters, Mike's wife and the keyboard player for The Alarm, is a breast cancer survivor who received her diagnosis during the filming of the 2017 BBC documentary Mike and Jules, We Still Have Time. Mike and Jules have continued to support the cancer community with the Love, Hope, Strength Foundation, which works to expand the Marrow Registry, and by converting a Welsh chapel into a retreat for those impacted by cancer. In this episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Peters tells CURE about his cancer journey and the creation of Forwards.
I was diagnosed with pneumonia at the end of the tour, and as a leukemia survivor with a compromised immune system, my doctors had always warned me about pneumonia, and they'd always told me off if they came to a gig and saw me jumping into the audience or something. They think you shouldn't be doing that. When I got pneumonia, I was quite shocked, and because it was out of the blue, and I was supposed to rest. You know, that the doctors told me I had to stop touring and doing all that, and the only cure for it was to rest. And so I started playing the guitar in the morning. I thought, that's the one thing I can do and rest. I don't think you can tie yourself out playing the guitar necessarily. And so when that got me into the habit of playing guitar on a daily basis, more than I'd ever done before, really. And while I was having the new pneumonia, it was never going away. It wasn't getting any better. And then more tests and hospitalization happened, and then they realized that there was my leukemia was starting to go in a different direction and rear its start to fight back against me. I stopped being able to ingest the drugs that had been working to a point. I started to reject all those. And I think because it was a pandemic time, post-pandemic, most of the consultations I was having at the time were over the phone, were remote. And so I wasn't being seen. So my wife could see that I was in a very bad way. So she got me to the doctors and said, Mike has to be seen. The stats aren't telling you the full picture. You need to look at him and see what's going on. And then I was straight into hospital. My lungs were full of blood. The leukemia was out of control, and my blood count was going up close to 200 on the white count. And so it was. They said, "Look, we're going to have to put you in hospital, and then we carry out the test to find out what's really going on." And they had to sort of treat the pneumonia and the lungs first before they could get to the leukemia. So, and then they said to me, right, well, you're going to be in here for a few months. And I was like, whoa. And I was had to lie on my side for weeks because I had a drain coming out of my back, you know. And at times I was allowed to sit up. When they took me off the IV, I was allowed to sit up. And I thought, oh, you know, I wish I could have my guitar. So I got my wife to bring my guitar into the wood. It was mainly just to protect my fingers. So I keep my calluses on my fingers so I wouldn't lose that touch. And I thought, I'm just going to play quietly. I won't annoy the other patients. I'll just strum a few chords quietly and everyone. And then it started, didn't it? Of course, then everyone's play that again, you know, from the next bed over there. And hey, man, you know, what about this? You know, do you know any of that? You know, and I, yeah, okay, you know. And I play some, and then the auxiliary staff would be cleaning around, and they cleaned under my bed twice, you know, because they like the sound of the chords. You know, I think it was a pleasant sound to have in the hospital, amongst all the general discord that's going on. And so I wasn't dissuaded from playing the guitar, I was encouraged. And then all of a sudden, new songs started to arrive because that's what happens. And I was in this situation where I wasn't sure what was going on. I wasn't sure what was going to happen next. I wasn't sure if I was going to go to the next world or get to the next chapter of my life. I wasn't, it wasn't clear what the outcome was going to be. And my doctor wasn't sure either. You know, the hematologist I was with, Dr. Harting, was quite new to me. I'd been with a gentleman called Dr. Edwards for 30 odd years of living with leukemia and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he was of the age where he couldn't come onto the wards, and he was working from home, so he assigned me to a younger doctor who was more robust for the medical wards and the situation. And he was fantastic. I got to say, Dr. Harting was great, and he could prescribe things that my older doctor couldn't because he was in. I moved hospital as well. I moved cl to a hospital close to home, and so got access to some, you know, brand new treatments. Venetoclax is the drug I'm on now, and that's, you know, and it meant again staying in hospital to get used to the drug. It took me 8 weeks, 4 weeks to get used to build, allow the drug dosage to be built up. So I had a lot of time in hospital with my little guitar and came out with a lot of songs.
And what was the reaction to your medical team, the doctors, the nurses, as they heard these new songs coming together, these new songs that either directly or kind of metaphorically spoke to what you were going through?
I think for a lot of them, they didn't know they were new songs. I didn't. I was just strumming some chords, playing some things, and they'd say, you know, the girls would say, "Yeah, that's really nice. Can you know, play? I'm coming to clean the room again in a minute." You know, even the medical staff, I'd be playing. I'd put the guitar when the medical team came in, and nobody said you shouldn't be doing that. You know, but I would start saying to the doctor, "Look, you know, I'm a musician, this is my life. You know, I've got to get back to being able to play guitar, and that's why I'm keeping it going." And they said, they kept saying to me, "Look, Mike, your life's going to be very different when you when we get on top of this." You know, and they wouldn't really say when getting on top of it was, or even if it, getting on top of it was a reality. Because I think nowadays in hospital situations, unfortunately, it's become quite litigious in hospital now, and people don't like to give out hope to patients because it can become false hopes, and they don't like to give out ideas of outcomes because outcomes might not happen, you know. And so there was a lot of reading between the lines, I think, has to go on for patients now. And so when I was in hospital, I was. It wasn't said, but I was like, why am I going for this test and why am I having that test? And I felt like when I got on Dr. Google, which everyone does, I could see there was a symptom and a situation for long-term leukemia patients that could their drug can mutate into Richter's syndrome. And I thought, I knew that that's what they were testing me for. And there was a concern. I could tell it was a real concern without it being voiced until they knew for certain. They wouldn't tell me about Richter syndrome until they knew for certain. And they wouldn't say it's not. It was just unspoken, but I knew the testing was going on. And so that made it quite scary, to be honest, for me as an individual, because I thought, well, if it becomes that, then I might not come out of this place. And so that plays on your mind quite a lot. And you try to be positive about it all and suppress those darker thoughts. But they come out in the music, you know, they just do. They come out. And I think your optimism comes out stronger than your pessimism. For me, it does anyway. And then when the Dr. Hart was able to sort of say how pleased he was that the drugs were working, and I got all my, I had, I was, I sort of went through a cold turkey period, really, when I was coming off. I was on ibrutinib, neural chemotherapy drug, and that never really worked great for me. I'd started off on a drug called idelalisib that was similar. And then that I started rejecting that, and then I was able to go on to ibrutinib, but it never quite got my blood count under control. And then one day Dr. Harting came and said, when I got used to, when I'd gone through the zone of not being on any drugs at all, but to then being on, starting on the new ones, and they started to work, I could sense that I was going to make it through this time, and I could feel that. Yeah, then the optimism starts to really course through your veins. You want to get out then, don't you? I want out of here, you know. And that comes into the songs, you know. You just can't help it. You pick up the guitar, you don't even think about it, and next minute you're playing the riff, you know, and it's arrived. And you don't know I still find it magic now how it appears.
Peters returned to the North Wales Cancer Centre, where he underwent 2 months of treatment, to film the music video for Next, one of the new album's singles. He told us about that experience. Are you ready for what's next?
This is the go-ahead, all the green lights have been stopped. It was pretty amazing. I shot it in 20 minutes because I didn't really have full permission to go into the hospital. and it was literally shot on an iPhone with a pair of AirPods in, so you couldn't see any wires. But that's all I needed. I only needed to walk down the corridor once, because it was just after I'd come out of hospital, and I have to portray that feeling of what it's like to be coming through the doors, saying, right, I'm ready to leave now. And it's you know, a hospital is an incredible place to be, but it's not home. When you've won in those hospital situations, or you've claimed your life back and you can take it away with you and go home, it's an amazing feeling to walk through the doors at home and to leave the hospital behind, but always eternally grateful for what went on when you were in that place, you know. And I've seen some incredible people treat me, and nurses go, and it's ironic. I was thinking, One, there was a nurse called Sue, and she looked after me on my first ever chemotherapy treatment. And my doctor, Edwards, who looks after me, he plays music as well, so we get on the same wave. He's a lot older than me now, so he's the one who has to be work from home. But he's been a brilliant doctor all his life, and we had this sort of like, I said to him, look, I know I'm going to have chemotherapy, but I'm going to play gigs. I'm going to play shows. I'm going to, as long as I possibly can. So he said, well, come in for your chemo next Thursday and we'll start. I went, great. Okay, brilliant. Well, it was all verbal. There was no letters. And he'd really booked me in on the Wednesday for treatment. And I was just leaving home to go to do this gig. And the nursing staff rang and said, where are you? You know, and I said, well, I'm on my way to a gig. And I said, no, you'd better come to the hospital because you're having your treatment. And no one in the history of the hospital has ever not turned up for chemo. You'll be the first person. And we've ordered it. It's here. We can't waste it. We're not supposed to really order it till you get here, but no one's ever not turned up. So we just thought we'd get, he's a bit late, we'll order it now, you know. I thought, no. So I went there and had my treatment. And so I was running late, obviously. And then, but nobody said anything. Nobody said, or told me off, or they all made light of it, no problem. And then I was having my treatment. I started to react to the treatment. I didn't know really what I was doing, but I felt a bit guilty, and it was getting late at night, and it was the night before Christmas Eve in 95. And I thought, oh, I'm feeling a bit cold, but I won't ring the bell. I won't disturb the nurses. And then just as I was leaving, the nurse came in and said, oh, are you having a treatment? So she opened the windows and got me to calm down a bit. And I said, oh, I'm sorry you're late. I'm sorry it's late. You know, she said, oh, don't worry. You know, we've got a whole ward of patients out there. I've got plenty of people to treat. So an hour later goes by, and I start shivering again, freezing cold. And so I thought, oh, I won't bother. She's got loads of patients out there. So I'll just get my IV and I'll walk down there and I'll go and get a cup of tea from the machine. And I walked out the room and I was shaking like a leaf. And I got to the tea machine and I could hear this. It was empty. The ward was dead. There was pitch black. And I could hear this voice from the reception. And it was Sue, the nurse, saying, hey, oh, I'll be home soon. We've got one patient. He's running late, but don't worry, I'll be home for Christmas tonight. And all this kind of thing. And then she came out and went, the first time she told me, what are you doing here? You should be in your room. You're having a reaction. And told me off, got me a room, opened all the windows up, got the temperature down and calmed me down a bit. And I said, you said there was loads of patients. You go, well, it's my job to look after you. I'm not gonna, you know. And I said, but you've given up your night with your family to look after me. And she said, well, I'm a nurse, that's what I do, Mike, you know. And I thought, wow, this is the kind of person I want for support. And she says, and guess what, I'm an alarm fan. I used to have the red poppy on my wall when I was growing up. It was brilliant. And that's where our charity Love Hope Strength started in that moment. So this is the person I want to support. There was plenty going on with cancer research. I thought, we'll climb that mountain I could see in the through the window, and we'll bring the money here, and we'll give it to someone who can help, you know, get you on and off the bed if you need to go to the bathroom or things like that. They're the things that I felt needed attention.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. Find us on Facebook at Cure Today, Twitter at Cure_Today, and Instagram at Cure Today. There's no way.